like to read with you in 1 Chronicles chapter 11, please. 1 Chronicles chapter 11. 1 Chronicles chapter 11 and verse number 1. Then all Israel gathered themselves to David unto Hebron, saying, Behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. Moreover, in time past, even when Saul was king, thou wast he that leddest out and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord thy God said unto thee, Thou shalt feed my people Israel, and thou shalt be ruler over my people, and so on. And now we just come down. I'm just going to pick up some names that I want, maybe you just to remember out of this chapter. And verse number 6, and David said, Whosoever smiteth the Jebusites first shall be chief and captain. So Joab steps forward. We come down a little further, and we can read in verse 11, and this is the number of the mighty men whom David had, Jabeshim and Hakamite, and chief of the captains. He lifted up his spear against 300 slain by him at one time. And after him was Eliezer, the son of Dodo, the Ammonite, who was one of the three mighties. And then further in the chapter, we have just coming down to verse number 17. And David longed and said, Oh, that one would give me to drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem that is at the gate. And the three brake through the host of the Philistines, drew out the water of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. But David would not drink of it, but poured it out to the Lord. And so on. Verse 20, and Abishai, the brother of Joab, he was chief of the three. Down verse 22, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, son of a valiant man of Gabzeel, who had done many acts. He slew two lion-like men of Moab, whom he went down and slew a lion in a pit on a snowy day. And of course, then we have the list of 30, if you like, of David's mighty men. But come over to chapter 12. Just notice how there's a shift in the scene. There's a change between chapter 11 and chapter 12. That's quite remarkable, I want to point out to you. Chapter 12, Now these are they that came to David to Ziklag while he was yet kept him close because of Saul, the son of Kish, that they were among the mighty men helpers. Interesting. Don't find that verse, that word in chapter 11, but I find it in chapter 12. Helpers of the war. And now down to verse number 3. The chief was Azahir and the sons of Joash and so on. Now down please to verse number 8. Now the Gadites, they are separated themselves unto David into the hold to the wilderness, men of might and men of war, fit for the battle, that could handle shield, buckler, whose faces were like the faces of lions, and they were swift as roes upon the mountains. Verse 9, Ezer, and his name means helper. Ezer the first, Obadiah the second, Eliab the third, and so on. And then please to verse number 17, David went out to meet them and answered and said unto them, If ye become peaceably to me to help me, mine heart shall be knit unto you. But if ye come to betray me to mine enemy, seeing there is no wrong in mine hands, God our fathers look thereon and rebuke it. Verse number 18, just come to the middle of the verse. David and on thy, well, let me give you the whole verse. 18. Then the Spirit came upon Amaziah, who was chief of the captains, and he said, Thine are we, David. On thy side, thou son of Jesse. Peace be unto thee. Peace be to thine helpers, for thy God helpeth thee. Then David received them and made them captains of the band. Down to verse number 21. And they helped David against the band of the rovers, for they were all mighty men of valor and were captains in the host. Verse 22. For at that time, day by day, there came to David to help him until there was a great host like the host of God. And that'll suffice for reading it. Over to the New Testament, if you like, please, to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1.
Oh, they don't like drinking from the bottle in front of an audience.
So it's that or yesterday's water, but anyhow, we're all right.
Thank you.
Got to do it. Please don't tell them back east. You went to the conference and you saw McCandless drinking at the platform. In big trouble. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Now this I say that, verse 12, now this I say, maybe verse 11 gives us the connection better, for it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, of them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions among you. Now this I say, that every one of you saith, I am of Paul, of Apollos, I am of Cephas, I am of Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? And so on. Now, over to chapter 12. Chapter 12. That there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have, verse 25, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one of another. Whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. One member be honored, all members rejoice with it. Now ye are a body of Christ, and members in particular. Verse 28, God hath set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversities of tongues. Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Are all workers of miracles? Have all the gifts of healing? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? But covet earnestly the best gifts, yet I show unto you a more excellent way. A final reading in Romans, please. Romans. Romans chapter 16, verse number 1. I commend unto you Phoebe, our sister, which is the servant of the church which is in Cenchrea. That word for servant is helper. The word for succor, verse 2. That ye receive her in the Lord as become a saint, and that ye assist her in whatsoever business she hath need of you, for she hath been a succor of many. And of myself also. Greet Priscilla and Aquila, my helpers in Christ Jesus, who have for my sake laid down their own necks, of whom not only I gave thanks, but also of the churches of the Gentiles. And so on. Verse number 9, salute Urbane. Don't hear a lot about him. Our helper in Christ, Eustachius, my beloved. Now that is more reading than I usually do in a ministry meeting. And I'm not one of those that says, although it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. What I read here is more important than what I have to say, but I'm not up here to read the Bible to you. I'm up here to preach the Word of God to you. And to do that, I must read the Word of God, okay? What I want to draw your attention to today, and I think it'll just sit in your memory, hopefully, as it has with other brethren in their ministry, two things. We make up our choice in Christian life what we want. Basically, you are today, younger, older, let me appeal to my age, and everywhere else, you are the product of your choice in Christianity. You are not what the assembly has made you. The assembly is what you have made it. See, we get it reversed. But I want to think of two classes of people back in David's time and two classes that we have in Corinth. Very simple to remember them. Helpers or heroes? David's day. Go to chapter 11, 1 Chronicles chapter 11. Look at the list of heroes. Those big names, Joab, Abishai, and Eliezer, and just goes on and on and on. Where do you read the word helper? Go to chapter 12. And repeatedly it's the helpers, the helpers, the helpers. Names not even mentioned. Names not even mentioned. So when it comes to 1 Corinthians now, and we go to chapter 1, got the heroes. Chapter 1 is the heroes. You know what it was causing? Contentions and division. One stands up and he says, I'm of Cephas. Oh, how do you do? Other one says, I'm of Apollos. Well, isn't that interesting? And they go on like that. And even come to the point, they were just as wrong. One says, well, he is of Christ. Christ is never party of a divisive nature. Okay, never. So what do we have there? We got the heroes. Corinth loved their heroes. But when I come to chapter 12, where I've got gifts given to the church, what are they given for? To help the church. So I've got the helpers in chapter 12. I read back in Romans chapter 16, because Paul is able to identify with the helpers, those that helped him. Now, as if just you and I were in the auditorium this afternoon, I was coming down speaking. Let me ask you, or should I go and ask your brethren? Should I ask your brethren? What are you going after, helper or hero? See, go ask that world. You don't have to ask them. It's the heroes. We live in the world of its heroes. They're worshipped. They're advertised. They touch some particular product, and it immediately becomes of great value because they're a hero. Did you ever notice? There's something those heroes can't take. It's the downsides of the rising. They usually go put a bullet to their brain because they can't stand the fact they're no longer a hero. When it comes to the assembly testimony, nobody's a hero. Nobody. Preachers either. You know as well, you don't know we're anything but a hero, and we're certainly not angels. So my question and challenge to this audience today is, what are you in the assembly? Just stop at this moment now before we go any further. What are you in the assembly? Come on, you sisters too. You sisters too. Can I go to the brethren and say, so-and-so, a help? Yeah. Then you move on to another one. So-and-so, oh, wonderful help. Couldn't do without her. Couldn't do without her. Doesn't matter what it is, she's prepared to do it. You know, back home, the Christians in Sussex are very kind, and they sent me an email, and they said, now listen, Murray, you and your wife, here's what you've done over the years at the conference, and that's when I peel off the preacher uniform, and I put on the coveralls and go to work, okay? They said, what would you like to do? Well, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? I thought, well, maybe I'll make the announcements. No, I would never do that. I've never done it. I want the brethren in the assembly. You do right here in Edmonton making the announcements, not me. I wrote them back. It didn't take long, and I spoke for my wife too. I said, we will do what we are best at. And so far, we have proven to be best at our arms in the those stainless steel tanks scrubbing pans. That's what we did. And glad to do it. Just want to help. I mean, think of a tombstone. Okay? And on some tombstone, hero. So what? So what? You walk away, but give me that one. I don't care if her name was hardly known in the assembly. Don't care if they hardly got a mention that says, helper. That's what David wanted. A helper. I wouldn't be on this platform today if in the history of this testimony or any other testimony, there hadn't been helpers. Heroes don't last long. I'll go down over them. Joab, Abishai, go down those names. Couldn't deny that they weren't mightily used. But when it really came to installing David as king, who did it? The helpers. So let's just look at these. That gives you a little kind of an overview of where I'm going with this, but let's just look at this going back to the first, what we have in 1 Chronicles chapter 11 and in chapter 12. I want to think of four groups. I'm just going to go to chapter 12. Four groups that really are seen there with David that are going to install him as king. And we want these four groups in this company right here today. First of all, the loyal group. The loyal group of helpers. You know, I could be a helper today and not a helper next week, hardly speaking to anybody. I can go down and put on the act and be a real big helper. When it comes to pick up a piece of paper off the floor on Wednesday night, I leave that for the next shift. Is that how you operate? Or are you going to the washroom and all you complain about, I'm going to have a very practical vein, all you complain about is the unsanitary condition, but you never wipe the sink off. You never empty the garbage can out. That's below you. Oh, really? Really? And you're a helper? No, you just complain. The helper. The loyal group. The loyal group. You know, it's not easy to disengage from family ties and to be loyal from David. Remember, these are Saul's brethren. They had to disengage from family ties. Listen, I have to tell you, there comes a point where if you're going to be faithful to God, you sometimes have to take the family cap off and leave it outside the gate. That had to be awful hard for a man like Moses to do when he had to deal with a sister that babysat him. He's going to deal with her. With a brother. That's a great high priest. He's going to disrobe him. He's going to stand and watch and pray and appeal to God because both of them are smitten with leprosy. He's going to deal with nephews because of their disobedience and their rebellion. Deal with them before God. Cousins the same way. But Moses would do it. I admire and salute brethren, we have them amongst us. Well, they love their family ties. Family comes number two. God comes first. And this testimony comes first. And isn't it a case, well, you know, we can't speak to, so, well, we speak to her. Mom's right on our case. Ooh. Oh, isn't that a sad scene? Listen, I've been beaten up in that department too. I survived it. I'll tell you how it goes. If the thing goes good, you're a hero. If it goes bad, you're an orphan. Nobody wants you. Nobody wants you. But if you question if the boy was saved and he wasn't saved, he gets saved. My, you're the greatest. Oh, my, we love him. You go to another one and he doesn't want to give up what he doesn't have, and he knows he doesn't have it, but Mom thinks he does, and she's going to defend him. I can't believe that. Brethren, that doesn't happen a lot, but it happens too much if it happens once. Listen, be wise enough to do, just while I'm on that, what that dear man did in the Old Testament, what the mother did too. She just gave him, remember he says, I brought unto thy disciples my son, just left them with them. Whatever happens, happens. I simply tell brethren and sisters that I will deal with your child as I'd want a fellow servant of the Lord dealing with mine. Okay? I will deal with your daughter the same way that I would, and I've got two of them, I would want anybody else dealing with my girl. Helpers. So there's the loyal group. They're very loyal to David. Even Saul's brethren, Benjamin, verse number 2, you got it right there at the beginning of the chapter. Some of Saul's relatives followed David. Must have been quite a surprise when David saw them. Here they were coming from Saul. Here were men that understood that links with David are more important than links with Dad. Your links with Christ, dear child of God, are far more important than your links with your own family. You see that in the loyal group. Then there's the lethal group. You say, the lethal group? Yeah, that's the Gadites. Wow. The Gadites, they were tough boys. Just read about these men. They, you know, didn't matter whether it was left hand, right hand. These were men that were fighting. Now, these are men. They were Transjordan men. The rest of the family said, no, no, we're not going to fight that battle. We're standing on the other side. But there's a group of the Gadites said, no, we're going with David. We're going with David. If the Lord be not come, do you want to see an assembly still here in years to come? You stick with David, the heavenly David. When my grandfather decided he was leaving the assembly for another place, he had 5 sons. My father's one of the sons. And he had daughter Jean. He always told everybody, I've got 5 boys and Jean. Jean never married. Jean didn't have a driver's license. And granddad decided he was going somewhere else. Stubborn old man. No wonder we have to fight with stubbornness in this McCandless family. So he pushed back in his chair. He says, so, Jean, where are you going tomorrow morning? Because after all, she had to depend on him for a ride. She says, Dad, I'm going where I've been going for the last 15 years. Well, he says, but I'm not driving you there. That's where he should have been going too, where he had been going. She says, that's all right. The bus still runs. And she rode the bus to meeting. Now, let's fast forward that. I took granddad's funeral. And of the place that was so much love, and there was no love where he left. You ever heard those kind? There's 5 people there. Of the places that gathered as we gather here today, where his sons gathered, there's 115. Wow. Come to my Aunt Jean's funeral. Preached at that one too. All those overseers from Highbury Avenue, southwestern Ontario, that knew that woman, there to pay highest respect because they remembered a day when it would have been much easier just to go with Dad than to stand up and say, no, I'm not going there. That's easy to talk about, brethren. That's not easy to do. I admire a woman with that courage. God honored her for. Taught a Sunday school class, just carried out happily. I mean, you never see her at a conference. Didn't go to a lot of them, but you never see her moaning, well, here it is, and you know, Dad and Mom have gone over here. I thought, well, I'd stick with Lyle and Alan, and Lyle, that would be Eddie McCandless. I'm up your way. That would be his father, and my father is Alan McCandless, and stick with them. But no, that's who she cast her lot in, like Ruth did, with the people she'd always been with. The loyal group. The lethal group. But of that lethal group, I want to think of the caliber of the group. They are men of might, fit for battle. Okay, they weren't like not necessarily, I'm not thinking and implying that we should be going around looking for a battle in the assembly. No, it's not that. But there were men that could stand. Just that could stand. How about we make it out on that? I don't know anything about this part of the country. I was born and raised in Ontario and committed to the work from Ontario. I have lived for 40 years longer than I lived in southwestern Ontario. And I want to say, I work with men that will stand. When I was commended to the work, I had all kinds of men that would stand. I could have put on my hand the men that wouldn't have stood with me. When I went back to that same area today, I'm afraid I could hardly find enough men to put on one hand that would really stand, having done all to stand. Wouldn't do it. Not these men. That was the caliber of the group. They were top-notch soldiers. Okay? No wishy-washy here. Now, brother wrote me an email here. It's interesting, the ones you get. We've been conversing a little bit. Things. I was going to say, he used to be a really good friend. Now he's maybe reduced down to just a friend, okay? Here's what he says. He says, you know, Murray, you're beginning to sound more, capital letters if you would, more like Elijah every day. I wrote it back. I says, brother, what a compliment. I've been compared to different men, but never to Elijah. Come on, nobody likened you to Elijah, did they, ever? Anybody ever say you were like Elijah? I thought it was a tremendous compliment. People like Elijah. But I said, I want to tell you one thing about Elijah. Only says of Elijah one thing. It says nobody else. Saying he had a girdle of leather. I says, there's not too much elasticity there, is there? I says, we're working with brethren today that are wearing bungee cords for girdles. And then go this way and then go that way and they're all over the place. They couldn't stand if you paid them. Not these men here. The caliber of the group, the catalog of the group, gives the list of them, the courage of the group. They went over that Jordan. It overflowed its banks. The men that gathered with David at the time of barley harvest, they'd left the harvest. I mean, they weren't poor people that couldn't survive anywhere. They were successful men. Their poverty was, the king that was on the throne was the wrong man. That's what made them poor. And they were in that cave for one reason, because of David. As you get on to that chapter, and tumbling again and again over it is the helpers. So there's the loyal group, the lethal group, the local group. You know, that's what you got in verse 16, children of Benjamin and Judah. Ah, they're coming pretty close to David now. They're getting closer. David's coming to some of the family, some of the links. But listen to what that man says. Amaziah says, thine are we, David, on thy side, thou son of Jesse. They were a local group loyal to David. But then there was the logistical group. It's interesting. There fell some of Manasseh to David. Manasseh? Remember, who's on the other side of the Jordan? Gad and Manasseh. You know what that tells me? Because people meet in other places that I maybe wouldn't be happy going to. Maybe I have to remind myself, don't quite write them off. There might be some out of them that will honor David and be loyal to David. So let's leave that. I'm going to come quickly to the New Testament. Let's just leave that now. Chapter 11 is the heroes. Chapter 12 is the helpers. Ask yourself the question, who really installed David as king? The helpers. Who will keep installed the king of kings, David's greater son, and the place that bears the honor of his name? Helpers. I've never had any brother come to me and say, you know, we got far too many helpers in this assembly. Oh, there's too many.
I saw an old man one day. I guess I have to get back to a little younger than I am. Here he was shuffling along with this load of chairs. Young guys were out firing up their pickups. Excuse me? I said, what's going on here? Oh, he says, I said, listen, are you prepared to let them do the job? There's some boys that, oh, no. They wouldn't let you do it. They've done it for 50 years, going to still do it. Hardly put one foot in front of the other, but still going to do it. Listen, brother, pass responsibility before the brethren have to peel your hands off the job, something like this, you know, one finger at a time. If I had time, I'd go back and show you the first man of David's mighty men. You know what it says he did? Took his seat. He'd won his battles. He'd had his day. Took his seat. My kind, loving family tell me, they say, Dad, listen, you don't need to worry. When we start to detect you're losing it or getting past usefulness, you're going nowhere. We will sit behind you and staple your jacket to your chair. So you know what I've got to deal with. Rough bunch, eh? Now we come to the New Testament. 1 Corinthians. I think of a place like Corinth. I don't write Corinth off. Who is it that came and encouraged the soul of the Apostle Paul when he was in distress? When he was really down, who came? It was men from Corinth. So now we come to chapter 1. Now we go down them. And we have them. They're listening. I'm of Paul. I'm of Cephas. I'm of Christ. There's the list. But now we come over to chapter 12. And we see something totally different. Now, you're going to have to stay with me. Okay, you're going to stay with me. Listen, we'll deal with the clock later. If you got to go for your lunch, you take off. I'll tell you what we talked about. Okay, when you go down this list, all right? I'm talking about the list in verse number 28. God hath set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversities, and tongues. Now, you can put a no behind every question. Are all apostles? No. Are all prophets? No. Are all teachers? No. Are all workers of miracles? No. Have all the gifts of healing? No. Do all speak with tongues? No. Do all interpret? No. But he leaves out two gifts. You look to be fairly wide awake, brother, and I ask you what the two gifts are that he leaves out. You know what he left out? Helps and governments. Why should he leave them out? Why doesn't he say, are all helps? Because he expects all to be helps. Why doesn't he say, are all governments? Because he expects all to be governments. You say, that's it. I've wanted to be on the oversight. The brethren don't realize I want to be part of that government. Oh, really? It's not what it means at all. We'll come to it in a while. So he leaves them out. Do you know why? Well, let me give you what the word for governments is. The word for governments is pilotage. Pilotage. That's the pilot of a boat. Okay, not one that flies airplanes. Pilot of a boat. So what he's saying that is this. That all the gifts given to the church are meaningless unless they are helps or governments. Okay? Now, I know the theologians part company with me, but that happens quite frequently with me. When he says, wherefore, covet earnestly the best gifts, you've got them. What are the best gifts? Helps and governments. Paul says, I have no gift if it's not a help. I have no gift if there hasn't been pilotage in my experience. So that's the importance of two things. Of these helps. That's why I read to you in Romans chapter 16. There was Phoebe, a succor, a help of many. Then we have Priscilla, Aquila and Priscilla, my helpers. Salute Eurybe, my helper. Romans 16. Timotheus, my fellow worker. If I went to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, we would have read this. Not that we would have dominion over your faith, but be helpers of your joy. Helpers of your joy. If we can't come this far and be some kind of a help to the people who I'm speaking to and to whose face I am looking this afternoon, best I get on the plane and go back tonight. Because we have come with an exercise to help.
Let's bring back the local aspect. You prepared to do that, brother? Now, really, couldn't you be just a little more help in where you are, honestly? Couldn't you be just a little more help? Give it a little more. Are you telling me today, sister, you're maxed out what you're doing? You are if you're being a problem. But could you not just be a little more help? I'm not questioning that you're a help, that you're not a help, understand? But could you be just a little more? Like, I don't know. I have no idea what your contribution is. Just what we're talking about when it comes to maybe in your own experience. So, comes the helps. Very quickly, governments. The word is pilotage. That word for pilotage, let's see now. Oh man, in the middle of the country, you won't know what I'm talking about. You live in the East Coast, you do. If you were to come to St. John, New Brunswick, you would see, or St. John's, Newfoundland, or Halifax, you would see in the harbor a boat, pilot boat. What's that for? What's a pilot boat for? Come on, you got some nautical thinking there. Well, when those great, big, massive ships come into St. John, there's a big carnival cruise that came in the other day, towering above the buildings in St. John, New Brunswick. The captain of that vessel is pretty experienced, likely a pretty well-paid man. But he doesn't bring that in the harbor. No, sir. That little tug with pilot on it, it goes out. And there's a staircase comes down over the side of that vessel. And a man starts, or a woman it could be, but let's stick with a man for now. Excuse me. Not chauvinist, okay? Just being honest. He makes his way up. And the captain on that vessel has already stepped out of place. Now he steps in. What's he going to do? Ask for some coffee? No. He is going to guide that vessel till it's docked safely. That's the pilot. He knows the outcroppings in that harbor that captain that's ridden miles in the sea doesn't know. He communicates. There it comes, Hebrews again. Hebrews chapter, with the helmsman getting his orders from a control area on that dock that tells him where to go. Give him a vessel. Just the last part of the journey of that big vessel is so important. Boy, too bad Solomon didn't have one, eh? Maybe he didn't want it. Started off, young Solomon loved the Lord. Old Solomon loved many strange women. Was there nobody there to just guide him past that? Was there no, let me ask you today, okay. Listen, there's pilots here today, and I'm not talking about aeronautical ones. There's pilots in the assembly here in Edmonton, Wood Buffalo, other assemblies represented, definitely. You know what they seek to do? No, they don't seek to control you. They just seek to guide you. That's why when they come to you, they're not trying to run your life or ruin it. They're trying to guide you by something that would be harmful to you that you may not see. Isn't that what Abigail is doing with David? I mean, she had a desperate husband. That Nabal was a wicked man. David was ready to take him out, and David could have taken him out. One stroke, and he was history. And she said, David, no. No, David. What does she do to kind of cool him off? I can tell you what my wife does to cool me off. But what did she do? She mentioned the sling to him. Why the sling? She said, David, remember a victory that you won back there for the whole nation? Now here's a victory you can win for yourself. Don't lose it! And she was successful. Am I got the right? Is she the right wife? Was that Nabal's wife? Was that Abigail? I think so. You get the same, you get question yourself, you know? Okay.
The sign of age.
It is. Anyhow, she was able to save a good man, hardly a better king. Wasn't a better king. The rest of the kings were all judged by David. She was able to preserve him right at the end of life. She was a pilot. Dear sister, go in for it. Come on, there are younger sisters here that need your pilotage. They need you to guide them. There's too many rocks cropping out that they don't see just below the surface. Guide them past it. Isn't that what Paul is doing when he writes and he appeals to Philemon with Onesimus? Boy, I mean, on the legal side and right for right, dollar for dollar, oh no, says Paul, whatever you do, whatever he owes you, I'll pay it. Hey, he's in jail. He's penniless. You're going to pay it. How's he going to pay it? God would meet his need. But he didn't want that man, for the sake of better expression, to mess up. Do you know why? It would affect the testimony at Colossae. And it would affect other places. So at that moment, Paul is acting like a pilot seeking to guide him by those dangerous waters. I'm not boasting, brethren and sisters. God knows my heart, and I am not doing that. But I am here to tell you today that I am the result of some good pilotage by men that were just a little older than me at the time. And they guided me past some pretty dangerous streams and some pretty dangerous scenes. And I'm very thankful for it today. I still have today younger men than myself that I am responsible to. That they see something happening maybe with me or whatever it might be, or interactions, whatever. They say, Murray, just at the time, say, hey, what do you know about it? I was preaching before you were going to school. But they're just trying to be that pilotage. Go in for it. Think of it. Who's in your assembly that you couldn't just give a little help to? Pilot them, seek to guide them. Or the help. Do what you can. Ray Blankenship was his name. Paul Harvey told the story. That famous news commentator back in the U.S. told a story about Ray Blankenship. Ray Blankenship stood at his kitchen window one day, and he worked for the city at the time. It was down one of the southern cities. I forget just what it was now. But there were these drainage, and you'd have to live in the southern part of the U.S. to know what these drainage ditches are for the overrun when they have maybe a fast flood or whatever. But the currents are very, very strong. Ray is just at the kitchen putting away his breakfast things, getting ready to go to work, and he looks out the window and he sees a girl tumbling one of these ditches. Now, the ditches are not that wide, maybe 16 feet wide, but very deep, and they flow under concrete culverts as they go under the road. He tore out of the house. He called for help. Nobody around to help. Called to the girl. She couldn't answer. Just a matter of time, he thought, if she doesn't get pulled out of there, somehow rescued, before she gets to that culvert on 9th Street, she's done. That man forgot about age, breakfast, forgot about everything. And he raced his way along, and he dove in the water, and he grabbed that girl. And now he's starting to reach for things, and hopefully to stop the current, stop the girl. Successfully, he got a hold of a branch or a piece of wood 12 feet from the culvert, and called with what strength he had left, nobody to come. Finally, that man got his shoulder around to that girl and hoisted her up on the bank. Up on the bank himself. The fire department came, the news people came, and they couldn't believe it, what they saw. This man rescuing a girl like that. He had pulled her to safety. Both of them were treated for shock, but they discovered later how much of a hero Ray was. Ray Blankenship. You know what made him a hero? He couldn't swim. Seriously, couldn't swim a stroke. He was given one of the highest honors that the United States give from their Coast Guard and from their inner waterways, people that control that, and the Red Cross. Highest honors. Because they said this. Here was a man that did what he could. All he was trying to do was help that girl. And helping that girl, he became a hero. Now, just a minute. As I sit down, you going to go home and be a helper? Going to go home and be a helper? I'm not saying you aren't now. Be a little more of a helper, brother. The helpers are there prayer meeting night, if at all possible. The helpers are there at the prayer meeting before the gospel meeting, if at all possible. They're there. What are they doing? They're helping the cause of David to see the rightful man enthroned. Go in for it. God will bless you for it.